glimpse at the guidelines that will shape the future of Ontario's pandemic fight. There are restrictive rules for those who aren't vaccinated, and what happens next if you are exposed to COVID-19. Good evening. There will be a different set of conditions depending on someone's vaccination status.
Measures around testing, outbreaks, and isolation that could affect millions of us in the months ahead. We begin with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. Colin.
Well, Nathan, this could be the province's way of convincing the final few to go into a vaccination site and roll up their sleeve. The province says if you are unvaccinated and you're exposed to the virus, you will have to isolate for 10 days, even if you are asymptomatic.
Cases of COVID-19 may be on the rise, but health experts say the fourth wave will be very different.
This will be a pandemic of the unvaccinated now.
According to new provincial guidance, unvaccinated people will be treated differently if they are exposed to the virus. Those who are unvaccinated would have to isolate for a minimum of 10 days and require two negative COVID-19 tests 7 days apart. But fully vaccinated Ontarians would face a different set of rules. If you are exposed but asymptomatic, you would only have to monitor your symptoms for 10 days and would not be required to get a test. Symptomatic individuals would have to self-isolate for 10 days if they are COVID positive, but can leave home after 24 to 48 hours if they are negative. Health experts say the vaccine is ultimately what makes the difference.
If you are vaccinated, you pick up COVID, you are less likely to transmit it to somebody who isn't vaccinated. And one of the reasons is that the period in which they're infective and can transmit virus is generally going to be shorter.
Those isolation rules are also going to apply to students and educators, but with a little nuance. If a student tests positive, for example, the entire cohort, regardless of where they sit, will be considered a high-risk contact. While symptomatic contacts would need to be tested, students who are vaccinated and asymptomatic can return to school almost immediately. But if students in a cohort are largely unvaccinated, they would have to isolate for 10 days and be tested for the virus, leaving thousands of students under the age of 12 at risk.
We need to try to keep schools as safe as we can, also for those below the age of 12 who didn't have an opportunity to get vaccinated, meaning all the parents should get vaccinated, all the school staff should get vaccinated.
Some in the medical community say the province needs to clarify whether vaccines will be mandatory for frontline workers.
As we do continue to see case counts rise, it will be vital for Dr. Moore and the province to make very clear an overall provincial vaccine policy. There may be certain settings that are more amenable to requiring or to having vaccinations as part of the foundation, and certainly school settings are one that are being discussed.
The Ford government has so far rejected the idea of mandatory vaccinations.
So what happens in an elementary school? Well, the province says those under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine will fall under the unvaccinated category. That means if a student tests positive, the entire cohort would be sent home and would have to isolate for a minimum of 10 days. In middle schools and in high schools where there is more vaccine coverage, the province says it would be an exceptionally low case or a percent or chance that the entire school would have to be closed in the event of an outbreak. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. There's a lot of information in the province's new guidance, and our online team is keeping track of all of it. You can find complete coverage on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca.
When it comes to new cases, Ontario is seeing similar case numbers to yesterday, the majority in people without a vaccine. Public Health Ontario is reporting 324 new cases today. 234 of those cases are among unvaccinated people, while 32 are partially vaccinated and 58 are fully vaccinated.
204 more cases are considered resolved, raising that figure to more than 541,000 over the course of the pandemic. Three more deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,412 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 72 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 41 in Hamilton. York Region logged 31 new cases, with 30 in Peel and 17 in Halton. There are 14 new cases in Durham Region and 5 in Niagara. A big step from the federal government tonight, promising to create a vaccine passport for international travel.
That proof of vaccination document is proven controversial. Here in Ontario, the province has been resistant to the idea. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more. Natalie.
Hi, Nathan. Well, some advocates here in Ontario had been insisting that that little paper slip that you get with your vaccine isn't strong enough proof of immunization for some places that are requiring evidence of vaccination. And some of them are now hoping that this new federal certification that is designed for international travel could be used here at home as well. Whether it's a college campus or a strip club, more and more Ontario establishments are starting to require proof of vaccination against COVID-19. But thus far, the province's plan hasn't involved allowing someone to flash a QR code or anything other than this slip of paper given at the time of the shot to prove immunization status, saying it could open the doors to forgery and fakes.
Suggesting that paper is somehow more secure than an electronically delivered QR code is laughable on a good day. Hackers can very easily compromise the paper-based code as well.
Twitter users have been quick to point out problems with the provincial plan, showing how easily the paper slip could be altered. But today, the federal government announced a plan for a much more official vaccine passport, a digital document for the purposes of travel abroad.
Having an internationally recognized proof of vaccination credential, we think, is essential for Canadians who want to safely resume international travel when it's appropriate to do so.
A document some travel industry experts had said could help alleviate concerns for Ontarians who needed more substantial proof of vaccination internationally.
That is a really pertinent question that a lot of Ontarians are asking right now, is that, you know, this tiny piece of paper that I got when I got my second vaccination or my first vaccination, is that really going to be enough to take abroad or even interprovincially?
The federal government says Ontario could choose to use the credentials domestically, potential proof within the province.
The connection between what the feds have announced and what we're calling for in the province could be, quite frankly, if the province were agreeable to it, is how do we make that available as a tool to businesses in the province to use?
If we are going down this road, government does need to be very clear about what the expectation, what the onus is for business owners.
Ottawa says it expects the federal vax pass to be ready by early fall, but is still mapping out how the technology will work. And the federal government says it will also provide an option for a paper proof of immunization for anyone who can't use or doesn't want to use a digital certificate. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Natalie. Here in Ontario, more than 48,000 shots were administered yesterday, raising the total to nearly 20 million since the rollout started. Nearly 11,000 of those shots were first doses, meaning nearly 10.6 million people are at least partially vaccinated. And more than 37,000 of yesterday's doses were second shots. That means more than 9.4 million people in Ontario are now fully vaccinated.
Also tonight, a first-of-its-kind study highlighting who could be a candidate for a COVID vaccine booster, outlining the potential eligibility and the effectiveness of a third shot to maximize protection. But first to a CTV News investigation.
We're learning a privacy breach at Durham Region may be wider than initially thought. CTV's John Woodward is live with more on this. John.
Michelle, we already knew about tens of thousands of students in the public school system whose information had been compromised. We're learning now about thousands of more children in the daycare system in an alleged crime that may go all the way to Ukraine.
This is video from a police raid in Ukraine in June. Officers from Ukraine, South Korea, and the U.S. finding loads of cash, but looking for something more valuable, data. The raid on an organization named Klopp, allegedly involved in ransomware, extorting organizations with their own files.
Somebody attacked the Excellion file transfer. That data somehow ended up in the hands of a group called Klopp.
Online files seem to link Klopp to a breach in Durham Region earlier this year. The breach was known to involve the personal information of tens of thousands of public school students, but CTV News has learned it appears to be bigger than that.
That it is out there for anybody to see is a little jarring.
Information of parents like Chris Pereira. His two-year-old child is among more than 3,200 children and their families whose personal information appears to be in the cash stolen from Durham Region. Of these, some 200 children's personal vaccination records were also exposed. The region had warned the parents and the daycares, but weren't specific. Some daycares are not sending vaccination information to the region's public health department for now.
We're kind of just handling it on our own because we haven't been told when to submit it. It seems like it has been kind of put on the back burner.
The region told parents that the attack was on a third-party software and they're no longer using that software. The arrests may put a dent in Klopp, but...
There were some comments that it was only the money laundering side of the operation. And Klopp do certainly seem to still be active.
Cybersecurity definitely needs to be a priority when governments are looking at infrastructure, especially when it's an infrastructure that communicates such specific information.
A concern about storing vaccination records as more parts of Canada look to vaccine passports.
Ontario's Privacy Commissioner says it's still investigating the Durham breach. We are also looking into other types of records that have been posted online. Reporting live from Whitby, I'm John Woodward. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, John. Another hot and humid day across southern Ontario. The sticky conditions of summer leaving many people looking for relief. And those soaring temperatures are also leading to warnings. And the threat of severe weather. Lindsay Morrison is here with a look at how things are looking on the radar right now. Lindsay, it's summer. People have plans.
Absolutely. And as we make our way through another evening, we're tracking more thunderstorm activity around the GTA. It's still a little ways away from us right now, but you can see that line of storms now inching closer to the Kitchener-Waterloo area and the Niagara Escarpment. This is something we're going to be keeping an eye on right throughout the evening hours today. Severe thunderstorm warnings in orange, watches in yellow. And again, yellow means conditions are favorable for the development of these storms. Part of the reason why, the heat. And we have this heat warning that will remain in effect through the day tomorrow because once again, it is going to be feeling like 40. It still feels that way in places like Brampton and Niagara Falls. And for us in downtown Toronto and at Pearson International, tonight it's going to be another muggy one. We'll talk about when there's some relief from the heat in sight. That's coming up. For now, Nathan, over to you.
All right. Thank you, Lindsay. Still ahead, a driver accused of stunt driving pulled over by police twice in 25 minutes. Why some experts say they aren't surprised and what that means for your safety on the road.
Fired, she says, for living her truth, coming out as transgender during a video sermon just over a year ago.
Pastor Junia Joplin says she lost her job because of it, and now she's launching a legal lawsuit against her former church. CTV's Janice Golding is live with more. Janice.
Hi, Nathan. Yes, Reverend Junia Joplin originally presented as male when she was hired by her Mississauga church in the spring of 2014. Shortly coming out, however, she was dismissed, and now she's seeking restitution and hoping to spark change. It's been just over a year since Pastor Junia Joplin came out as transgender to her congregation in a live stream sermon.
Hi, friends. Hi, family. My name is Junia. You can call me June. I'm a transgender woman.
Within days, Joplin says her preaching duties at Lorne Park Baptist Church were suspended.
I was worried about losing my job. I knew that I shouldn't have to lose my job, but that it might happen.
A lengthy question and answer period followed. According to a recently filed legal statement of claim in which Joplin alleges wrongful dismissal, the Reverend faced questions from congregants such as, June, it doesn't seem that you care or have shown any remorse for how you have hurt our church family, especially the families with children who are watching on June 14. Care to comment?
Those were hard to read because I could see some of the anger, some of the, I guess, ignorance, some of the hate behind those questions.
5 weeks after she came out about her gender identity, in a close vote, congregants ultimately voted to end Joplin's employment, some 6 years after she assumed her role as lead pastor.
When I got the call and got the news, I had a little cry there on the patio of a restaurant in Mississauga, and then I spent the night just wide awake.
The church says the congregation voted to terminate Joplin's employment for theological reasons. Joplin's claim, meanwhile, alleges the church breached its obligations under the Human Rights Code.
I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right for churches to say we want to violate people's rights because we think this is what God wants us to do.
In a written statement, the chair of the church's executive council says it is our strong belief that this decision, based on the religious beliefs of a critical mass of our congregation, was lawful under Section 24(1)(a) of the Human Rights Code. As to her argument that the law is unconstitutional, we take no position on that and will leave that to her to pursue with the government and the courts, adding, we wish her God's grace and peace. EGAL, Canada's national LGBTQ2S plus human rights organization, says cases like Joplin spotlight institutional discrimination.
Your gender identity is not a choice. Your religion is a choice. And I think that this is something that we need to address. And it's religious rights versus human rights.
Joplin says while it's been a difficult process, she hopes her lawsuit will help make the world a more inclusive, safer place.
And so I knew if I do this in a very public way, it's going to kind of force a lot of folks to have conversations that they've been putting off for way too long. And so I felt a sense of calling to come out the way that I did.
And despite the hardship this has caused her and her family, Joplin says she has no regrets. The statement of claim has not yet been tested in court. While she spent 9 months unemployed and worrying about bills and paying her rent, she has since been hired by the Metropolitan Community Church of Toronto. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Michelle.
Thank you, Janice. CTV's Austin Delaney is next with some bad behavior on the roads in York Region. Austin, a single driver caught twice in the span of just half an hour.
This is video. You have to see it to believe it, and you will see it momentarily. It is dash cam video from a York police cruiser as they pull over a car whose the driver had his license suspended just 25 minutes earlier.
Do you have a driver's license, ownership insurance?
It seems like a routine stop for this York Regional Police officer.
Do you have a driver's license?
The driver doesn't have it.
Why don't you have it, sir? So I'm going to let you know that the registered owner of this vehicle had their license suspended this morning for stunt driving. Are you the owner of this vehicle?
Yes.
Perfect. Do me a favor, step out of the car. Right now you're under arrest for driving while suspended, okay?
25 minutes earlier, York police say that same driver had been charged with stunt driving, stopped doing 115K in a 60 zone, his license suspended for 7 days, his car impounded for 14 days.
The scary part is people are suspended all the time and continue to drive.
Brian Patterson of the Ontario Safety League says he is not surprised.
They come out of the courthouse having been suspended, they get in their car and drive home.
Do me a favor, step out of the car. Right now you're under arrest for driving while suspended, okay?
In this case, police were watching. It happens more than you think, says the OPP Sergeant Kerry Schmidt.
Well, sure, we've seen that in the past. Sometimes not just that short of a time window, but longer times. We see people driving under suspension, driving while disqualified, based on convictions from impaired driving, dangerous driving.
The OPP sergeant says it is frustrating because someone's license is suspended as a deterrent because their driving privileges were taken away to make the roads safer for others.
And when drivers choose to ignore those rules, you know, that puts everybody at risk because they're driving in a manner that is putting themselves and the community at risk.
Do you have a driver's license?
Since July 1st, the OPP alone have laid more than 700 stunt driving charges in the province of Ontario. And a 59-year-old Richmond Hill man now has a court date, not only for stunt driving, but also for driving under suspension. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. The OPP says it would have been catastrophic. This was a very close call. Dash cam video shows two cars trying to pass a transport truck in Brant County right there. But the second vehicle ran out of time and rode. Police are hoping anyone who saw this happen will contact them to help identify the driver. Investigators believe the car is a four-door Cadillac-type sedan. The near tragedy occurred Monday afternoon.
It's certainly not official, but the former head of Canada's Armed Forces is planning to return to his post. It comes after military police opted not to charge Admiral Art MacDonald. MacDonald's lawyers say the only logical conclusion that can be drawn from the decision not to charge is that the evidence gathered did not rise to even the low threshold required. The complaint was unfounded. Investigators say there was not enough evidence to charge him. MacDonald stepped aside as chief of the defense staff while a probe began into an alleged misconduct. The Privy Council office says no decision had been made on whether to reinstate MacDonald.
Reinforcements have arrived. A group of South African firefighters touched down in Manitoba today to help battle the blazes raging across the province.
We have a fit, young team, very active and very anxious to show what we can do. In our previous deployments, we've always been graded in terms of the kind of work quality and the speed with which we work. So we bring that, but of course for us, The exposure to Kennedy is also an opportunity to see a new firefighting environment.
These are some of the more than 100 firefighters from South Africa. For many of them, this is their fourth deployment to Canada. They'll join about 400 Manitoba firefighters now working to get the wildfires under control. Right now, over 140 blazes are burning. Overseas, the wildfire crisis in Europe is expanding.
The emergency growing to include parts of North Africa. CTV's Zoraida Allman joins us with more on this. Zoraida.
Michelle and Nathan, the deadly heat wave gripping North Africa and the Mediterranean are just serving to fan the flames of the massive wildfires still burning throughout the region, overwhelming the thousands of firefighters who've arrived from all over Europe to help. Helicopters continue to drop water down into the forest fires, only to be swallowed up by the flames. More than 1,500 firefighters, including crews from more than a dozen other countries, working tirelessly to get control of the dozens of wildfires that continue to burn in Greece. On the island of Evia, all hands on deck, residents and volunteers bulldozing a path so firefighters can access the flames deep within the trees. In southern Italy, fire officials there say they've carried out more than 3,000 operations in the region in the last 12 hours. The relentless heat driving the fires, the thermometer in Sicily well over 40 degrees Celsius on Wednesday. The extreme heat also fueling deadly forest fires in parts of North Africa. In Algeria, the death toll from fires ravaging mountain forests and villages has climbed to 65 as residents ran from their homes for safety. My father's village burned down, this woman says. We left as fire was approaching. Officials say arson is suspected in some of the blazes. And Algeria's president has declared a three-day mourning period beginning tomorrow. On Greece's second-largest island of Evia, it has estimated 50,000 hectares of forest, villages and seaside resorts has been lost to the fires. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle and Nathan, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. China has fired a new salvo in its attempt to get Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou released from custody in Vancouver.
Canadian businessman Michael Spavor has been sentenced to 11 years in prison following what's being called a bogus trial. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
This Chinese prison is where Michael Spavor has been detained for the past 2.5 years. Now the Canadian entrepreneur will appeal the verdict, promising to keep him behind bars for another 11 years.
And he had three messages he wanted to send. One, thank you for all your support. It means a lot to me. Two, I am in good spirits. And three, I want to get home.
In December 2018, Spavor, along with former Canadian diplomat Michael Kovrig, were detained in China. Canadian officials say Beijing is using the men as leverage to end Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou's extradition process to the United States on fraud charges.
That the practice of arbitrary detention with a mock sham trial with absolutely no transparency whatsoever and a verdict that is completely unjustified.
One, two, three.
25 foreign diplomats joined Canadian embassy staff in Beijing to denounce the verdict. The Spavor family reacted in a statement. While we disagree with the charges, we realize that this is the next step in the process to bring Michael home, and we will continue to support him through this challenging time. In addition to Spavor's prison sentence on spying charges, he faces a fine and a deportation order.
The fact that the word deportation is part of the decision opens the door for an eventual grand bargain.
Hello.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called for Kovrig and Spavor's immediate release as American and Canadian officials are working to put pressure on China.
It certainly sounds from what Minister Garneau and Ambassador Barton were saying that we're close to some kind of perhaps potential resolution.
Michael Kovrig faces similar charges to Spavor, but it's not known yet what his next court date will be. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
There's been a lot of discussion recently about whether Canadians should get a third COVID-19 vaccine shot.
Now, a new study conducted in Toronto is shedding light on whether that would be safe and who should get it. CTV's Avis Favreau has those details.
This is the first study in the world to measure the effectiveness and safety of a third COVID vaccine dose in those who don't get enough protection from two shots, like patients taking immune-suppressing drugs after organ transplant. So researchers in Toronto studied 120 transplant patients. Half got a third shot of the Moderna vaccine. The rest were given a placebo injection. After a month, tests showed 60% of those who got that third booster had developed more antibodies that can block the coronavirus, compared to just 25% in the placebo group. The third dose also boosted T cells, a sign of longer-term immunity. Most importantly, doctors report that additional dose had only mild side effects.
So the results are very compelling. They're highly significant. And I think they're significant enough that we need to change our practice.
Mike Willis is a heart transplant patient who got a third shot as part of the study.
I'm hopeful that if I was to catch something, that I am finally a little bit better protected.
But there are many others with immune deficiencies triggered by cancer, lupus, and Crohn's disease who also don't get enough protection from two doses of COVID vaccination. Some are hoping this study will help them get that third shot too.
I've actually started planning. I'm seeing my specialist next week, and I'm providing her with all the data ahead of time so that we can discuss it fully to make sure it's going to be safe in my case.
Doctors say more research will be needed to see if this works for those with other immune conditions. Still, it's an intriguing hint that a third vaccine dose could be helpful to vulnerable patients. Avis Favreau, CTV News, Toronto.
Still to come, the masterpieces of Monet, experienced like never before. The immersive exhibit allowing visitors to step inside some of the world's most famous art.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, we know many Canadians have decided to vacation within our borders, and that's making rental cars harder to find. And the industry says increasing demand and a microchip shortage have sent prices higher. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
Just a scorcher of a day. In fact, at one point, downtown Toronto was the hot spot of Canada. We made it to a high of 31.4 degrees. It's our second 30-degree day so far this month. You may have noticed that this summer really hasn't felt as hot in Toronto. We've had 16 30-plus days, but that's about half the amount we'd had at this time last year. And so far, our hottest day of the summer, that was recorded in early June. Tomorrow, we're likely to hit 30 degrees once again, and at the risk of sounding like a bit of a broken record, it will feel closer to 40 once you factor in the humidity. So when will we get some relief from the heat? We're going to talk about that, and we are tracking thunderstorms. Details on a more comfortable weekend forecast ahead as well when CTV News returns in 2 minutes.
Due to the pandemic, many Canadians have decided to vacation within the country, checking out the East Coast, West Coast, or staying in their home province.
It's led to a huge shortage of rental cars. Many rental companies say they don't have enough cars on the lot, and those that do have raised prices. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert.
Last year, no one wanted to rent a car due to the pandemic, so many car rental companies trimmed their fleets and sold off their vehicles. Now they're trying to buy them back, but can't due to a microchip shortage, leading to fewer cars and higher prices. Many people who have traveled to the United States or internationally during the summer months have decided to visit Canadian cities and destinations instead. But if you need a rental car, good luck finding one. Costco's website shows if you wanted to rent a car at Pearson Airport this weekend or next weekend, every vehicle is sold out.
It's nuts.
This Edmonton-based car rental agency has never been busier, which would be ideal if they had cars available. With COVID-19 restrictions lifted, people are traveling and creating a major demand across Canada.
I had to call quite a lot of companies, like Enterprise, Hertz, all of them.
Yeah,
they were all sold out.
They can't get a car from any of the big car rental companies until middle of September.
If you do manage to book a vehicle, you'll pay for it. This time last year, you could book a car for $79 per week.
Right now, you can't find a car in Edmonton for $79 a day.
Rental car companies sold portions of their fleet when the pandemic struck and travel came to a virtual standstill, and building those fleets back up has been a challenge. Associated Canadian Car Rental Operators told CTV News, Car rental industry fleets in Canada are down 30 to 40% from pre-pandemic levels. The semiconductor chip shortage has impacted new vehicle production. Car rental companies are now competing with car dealers and other buyers as they try to restock their fleets. The microchip shortage is expected to last until the end of this year, meaning the car rental shortage could also last well into 2022. So if you need a rental car, don't assume there will be one waiting for you at the airport. You may need to check other locations, get a reservation, and expect to pay more than last year. The car rental situation is the same in the United States and other countries around the world. If you need a car, book as early as possible. Having flexible travel dates can also help. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
All right, to the forecast. Some kids might have soccer tonight. I know my son's got baseball. There might be some concerns.
Well, a lot of people just packing a whole bunch of water. The heat's been quite relentless this week. But, Lindsay, there is sort of an end to this. We just have another day of it.
We have another day of the extreme heat. Then things will start to change. And as we head into the weekend, I have some good news when it comes to Saturday specifically. It has been 3 or 4 weeks since we have had a Saturday without rain. And it looks like this weekend could gift us exactly that. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. Not so much the case tonight. In fact, we are tracking some active weather at this hour. So for the kids who do have baseball or soccer this evening, keep an eye on the sky and an ear out for a few rumbles of thunder, and then make sure that you have a safe place to go if a thunderstorm does in fact arrive. There are a few warnings in place around Collingwood, Ontario, and Kitchener-Waterloo. Right now, we're tracking a few storms that are making their way into the Cambridge area, for example, and again, just along the southern shore of Georgian Bay there. This is going to take a couple of hours before it makes its way toward us here in the GTA. Sun is still shining in many areas, but again, conditions are expected to change as the evening progresses. That's if that line of storms doesn't fizzle out. That actually happened this morning. We had thunderstorm activity for the West GTA, but the lightning, it was essentially gone by the time it made its way to downtown York region and Durham region. Cold front is going to swing through as we make our way into the day on Friday. Aside from tomorrow morning, that's when we have a chance of a few thunderstorms early on, maybe into the midday around Toronto. Then the afternoon looks to bring us some clearing. Our next best chance of a round of severe weather will come on Friday. And again, that's with the passing of a cold front. It's going to bring us some relief from the heat, especially as we make our way into the weekend. No relief to be found overnight tonight, though. We're forecasting a not so low low of 23 degrees, continuing to feel into the 30s once you factor in that humidity. Heat warning, it remains in place. It will be in place for tomorrow, and then it will likely come to an end after that because Friday is going to feel a little more comfortable. Saturday, believe it or not, we could be a tad below the seasonal average. Here's our upper air pattern that gives us a couple of clues as to what's happening with the temperature. Another ridge building in Western Canada, so it's not all good news for everyone. Here's a look at the 7-day forecast. High of 27 degrees for Friday. Look at Saturday, 23 for many. This is going to be a welcome change. I like the signs of the sight of this. Mainly sunny skies, lots of sunshine for Sunday as well as Monday. Temperature starts to climb to more seasonal values once again. I think the humidity is going to return through the early part of next week too, and I've got my eye on the middle part of next week for our next round of rain. That's your look at the 7-day forecast for now. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Lindsay. Also tonight, a warning over earbuds, the potential problems linked to a popular piece of technology, and how you may be able to avoid them. Earbuds are everywhere, and with increased functionality, many are wearing them for long hours.
And that could cause problems. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
Dr. Alan Mordell from New York warned earbuds can cause painful ear infections.
So your ear regularly sheds all the skin and everything out of the canal, along with the wax and the sweat, and it just cleans itself every single day.
but earbuds can interrupt that natural function.
If you push in the earbuds and if you're using them for long periods of time, what happens is you end up creating a moist environment and an occluded environment, which is just the kind of thing that bacteria and fungi like living in.
Dr. Talika Shingle says see a doctor if you start experiencing symptoms of an ear infection.
Which can manifest with a sensation of itchiness in the ears, and if it advances, you can get pain, discomfort, sometimes decreased hearing.
Who is most prone to these infections? Certainly those with a history of ear infections, as well as others.
People that have like skin conditions such as eczema, psoriasis, people who have narrow collapsible ear canals, those people might be more prone.
But avoiding unnecessary use of earbuds, taking frequent breaks when using them, or using headphones instead can help prevent infections. Dr. Shingle also warns against using cotton swabs in your ears to prevent pushing earwax further down. Dr. Shingle says she recently received a pair of earbuds, and although she hasn't tried them yet, she hears they're great as long as you use them carefully. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
The nominations are out for this year's MTV Video Music Awards, and a Canadian leads the pack.
When I'm away from you, I miss your touch. You're the reason I believe in love.
Justin Bieber received 7 nods today, including Artist of the Year, Best Pop Song for Peaches, and Video of the Year for Popstar. Megan Thee Stallion scored 6 nominations. She'll also compete for Artist of the Year at the September 12th ceremony in New York.
Meanwhile, the Black Eyed Peas will headline next month's Global Citizen Live concert in France. The band says it's eager to help bring about change. The concert is to encourage people to push governments and corporations on issues such as climate change, poverty, and vaccine equity. The 24-hour broadcast will feature performances on 6 continents. Okay, the category is hosts. The answer, Mike Richards and Mayim Bialik.
And the question, who are the new hosts of Jeopardy? CTV's Andrea Case joins us with more on the two people chosen to front the show. Andrea.
Good evening, Nathan and Michelle. Yes, well, Alex Trebek died from pancreatic cancer in November after his last recorded shows aired. The search was on to replace him. Now, 6 months and 16 guest hosts later, one of the world's favorite quiz shows has not one, but 2 new hosts.
Jeopardy is
he was a contender from the very beginning. Mike Richards, the executive producer of Jeopardy, was the second guest host in February and very quickly became a front runner. And today, Sony Pictures Television announced Richards was named the show's full-time host.
Who are the Detroit Red Wings? Gordie Howe was Alex's favorite player.
But Richards will share the duties with Big Bang Theory star Mayim Bialik.
It wasn't until high school that I fell in love with science, and
that love led to a Ph.D. in neuroscience from UCLA. The 45-year-old will host Jeopardy's primetime and spin-off series, including the all-new Jeopardy! National College Championship, scheduled to air next year. She has her 15-year-old son to thank for her new job.
He heard a thing online saying, like, Mayim Bialik should be the host of Jeopardy! And he was like, Mom, you should do this. And so I literally called Richard Weitz, that's my agent at WME, and I was like, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? And this one, he's like, I'm on it.
46-year-old Richards, who joined the crew as an executive producer last year, held previous positions as the host on High School Reunion and Beauty and the Geek. For 11 years, he was the executive producer of The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal, where he was in the running to replace Bob Barker. But just last week, Variety reported about accusations of pregnancy discrimination by former Price is Right models during Richards' time serving as executive producer. Richards was not personally named in the lawsuit, but one of the plaintiffs was awarded $7.7 million in 2013. Another settled out of court. Fan favorite and 74-time Jeopardy! Champion Ken Jennings was a strong contender, but he will remain a contestant on the show.
Let's start with a little romantic dinner music, shall we?
The 38th season of Jeopardy! Starts September 13th. Production begins later this month. But Alex says both she and Richards have known for a while that they were the new hosts, and there was a leak last week about the news. It appears Sony was forced to make the announcement now. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case. Have a good night.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Hump Day means time to put up your feet and unwind with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
there's no need to panic. What we just need to be aware of now is this will be a pandemic of the unvaccinated now.
Updating our top stories, as cases rise, the province says unvaccinated people will eventually have to isolate for a minimum of 10 days and require two negative COVID-19 tests. So far, the government has rejected mandatory vaccines.
This tiny piece of paper that I got when I got my second vaccination or my first vaccination, is that really going to be enough to take abroad or even interprovincially?
The question of vaccine passports remain up in the air in Ontario. But today, the federal government announced the plan for digital documentation for international travel.
Well, sure, we've seen that in the past, sometimes not just that short of a time window, but longer times. We see people driving under suspension, driving while disqualified, based on convictions from impaired driving, dangerous driving.
Police in York Region arrested the same driver twice within a half hour, once for allegedly stunt driving and for driving with a license that had been suspended for 7 days. Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. As the federal government announces a vaccine passport in the works, the Ontario Science Table says we're officially in the fourth wave.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Rashmi Nair and Nick Dixon. Nick, you've got a panel of medical experts to weigh in.
That's right, Nathan. You know, there's a bit of a disconnect between Dr. Kieran Moore and Dr. Peter Uni. Yesterday, Dr. Kieran Moore suggested we may be 10 days from the next phase of reopening. Well, Dr. Peter Uni today effectively said, no, let's hit the brakes on this. We are nowhere near ready for that. So we'll talk to him along with the panel. And we'll also talk about vaccine passports and the latest on COVID when it comes to those isolation guidelines for children and teachers when they head back to school.
And Rashmi, you're also going to be speaking with the Mississauga pastor who was fired after coming out as transgender.
Yes, hear more from her on the lawsuit that she's launched against the church. The church saying that they're following the Human Rights Code. We're going to talk about the Human Rights Code and why she thinks part of it should be challenged as unconstitutional. That conversation coming up on CP24 tonight.
All right, thank you, Rashmi and Nick.
Thanks.
And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 14 basis points to $79.98 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 96 cents a barrel to close at $69.25. And the TSX Composite Index gained 58 points to close at 20,554.
Canada's Félix Auger-Aliassime is out of the National Bank Open in Toronto. The 21-year-old Montrealer lost to Dusan Lajovic of Serbia today. As the number 9 seed in the tournament, Auger-Aliassime had a bye through to the second round. He also lost to Lajovic at the 2020 Australian Cup.
Meanwhile, Rebecca Marino's surprising run at the National Bank Open continued today. The 30-year-old Vancouver native advanced to the third round in Montreal after defeating Paula Badosa of Spain. Marino was ranked 220th in the world and was a wild card entry into the tournament.
And Richmond Hill's Denis Shapovalov will begin play at the National Bank Open this evening against American Francis Tiafoe. The 22-year-old Canadian comes in as the tournament's number 5 seed.
Toronto Maple Leaf fans can get an all-access pass to their favorite team starting next month.
I feel our team slipping. That's all we want to be about. We're a lot better than that collectively. Let's go win a game. Come on.
Amazon Prime Video will debut All or Nothing Toronto Maple Leafs on October 1st. The 5-part documentary will take fans into the dressing room, the front office, and visit with players away from the rink last season. The series will be available in more than 240 countries and territories.
After the break, engulfed by artwork, we give you a sneak peek of a new attraction offering a floor-to-ceiling experience like never before. It's being billed as the most immersive art experience ever to be brought to life, and it's making its world premiere in Toronto.
And before it opens to the public, CTV's Scott Lightfoot has a preview.
It
is the work of the world's most famous impressionist painter, experienced like never before.
What we wanted to create is to give the people the opportunity to actually step inside Manet's work, his vision of the world. So go beyond the frame and really discover his body of work from a different perspective.
Beyond Monet is a new immersive experience opening tomorrow inside the Metro Toronto Convention Center. Those who got an early look today were impressed.
Beyond Monet was beyond my expectations. I absolutely loved it. Probably the prettiest thing you could do on a day in Toronto.
Art aficionados may notice some similarities with other immersive art exhibitions currently on in this city, but the people behind Beyond Monet say there are differences with this exhibit that go beyond just the artist himself.
We wanted to kind of amplify the skies that he made. It was really about like temperature, weather, the surge of light, so we wanted to bring the sense of immersion, not just on the floor and on the walls, but also on the ceilings.
Like other immersive exhibits, Beyond Monet is designed for the social media set, but the designers have upped the Instagram ante with a pavilion built for posing and mirrored circles on the floor and seats, allowing for a more reflective look at the works.
And he would paint a lot of water reflection. He was obsessed towards the end of his life with reflection of water. He would paint the skies on water. So we played a lot with this idea of light, of reflection, refraction, that was really important and central in his work.
The world premiere of Beyond Monet is scheduled to run until October 3rd. Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
And the colorful experience continues on the radar behind Lindsay there. Unfortunately, it's not art, it's rain. Mm.
That's exactly true. I'm going to paint you a weather picture right now. And some of these storms are actually losing some of their steam as they make their way closer to the GTA. But right now we have thunder and lightning around Guelph, Brantford, and then further north around Midland, Penetanguishene as well. It is still hot right now. It's 30 degrees in Toronto, feeling closer to 40. And you really haven't escaped the heat if you're joining us from parts of cottage country either. Next 24 hours brings potential for maybe a couple of thunderstorms into tomorrow morning. I think the long range is a bit of a crowd pleaser, though. Look at Saturday, Sunday, and into the early part of next week, too. That's the weather. Michelle and Nathan, over to you.
Thanks, Lindsay, and be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Rashmi Nair and Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.